It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, you're listening to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction. More importantly, it's about recovery, and it's brought to you by our friends at useonlyasdirected.org. They got a three-part solution: speak out, opt out, and throw out. And today, we're lucky enough to have Susanna Burt here. She's going to talk about what they're doing on the mental health side of that and kind of what's going on in this crazy time that we're in. But before we get to Susanna, I want to check in with Dr. Matt.
How we doing?
You got tested.
I did.
Tell me about it.
Tested for the vid.
Okay, so because I haven't been tested. My dad just got tested because he just landed a part in a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Nice.
And what you don't know here in Utah is that they record the Christmas movies in June and July here
right.
in Utah.
Yes.
And so they're getting ready to go back on set, and everybody who has to be on set has to be tested.
Right.
So I want to know if your situation was similar to my dad's, because I said,
Dad, I'm in the same movie.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're playing Father Time? Got that long left? Luscious locks,
right? Exactly.
You could be a good. You would be a good Santa.
That's my retirement plan.
Give me a little ho ho ho
ho ho ho. I don't know.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. But I said, so what was the test like, Dad? He goes, it felt like they picked my brain.
Yeah.
He said. He goes, they went deep.
Yeah. Well, I was prepared. So I had been feeling not too good a few weekends ago, the fatigue and all of that sort of stuff. And I thought, well, I definitely owe it to everyone around me to go get tested. So I went and got tested. And it was very uncomfortable. But I didn't think it was as bad as some people had described. Now, I think that the next weekend, my girlfriend got feeling sick and went the next day and went and got tested as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she had pain from that for a couple of days afterwards. She felt discomfort up in her nasal passage and pain. It really got her, and it took her a good 10 minutes to be able to drive to get her eyes to stop watering.
So I think maybe
I just had somebody who...
Or you got a larger nasal cavity?
No, I don't. That's the thing. I know from past experience in my life that I have extremely small nasal passage. I think I just had an expert COVID tester, maybe.
So walk me through this. Because I think there's a lot of people that are kind of on the fence right now. Should I get tested? What's it like? And maybe there's a little being scared of the unknown.
Well, sure. I mean, they just ask you a bunch of questions. If they determine you need testing, and you do it right from your car, you can go to one of the University of Utah has several drive-up stations, and you can drive up, and they just ask you to put your head back, and they take a really long Q-tip-like device and put it up there, and I think they twist it around 20 times.
20 times.
So it's up in your nose about, I don't know, 30 seconds to a minute, something like that, and then they pull it out, and that's it. So it's very... You know, it's simple, but that a lot of people have talked about how bad that hurts. And my experience wasn't that it hurt. It was just really uncomfortable, and you kind of have to regulate your breathing, doing some of that meditation breathing. So
sitting with your divorced parents at Thanksgiving?
No.
Not that uncomfortable.
Not that uncomfortable.
I've been in that situation.
You can drive away. No. But
and then how long did you have to wait for the results?
They say 24 to 48 hours, but mine was 24 hours, a little under, actually.
And then when you got the call, it said, hey, Dr. Matt, negatory.
Right. And in my case, I just looked it up on my electronic medical record, and it was right there. But the question is, should I get tested, right? And in my case, I felt like, well, I have my kids, you know, and I'm wanting them actually to go out and do more things in public, but that means... You know, doing it responsibly, of course, but that means we need to know if I have it, if I'm going to pass it on. And then, of course, I have my work, and most of my work is virtual now, but, you know, coming here to the studio. And so I thought I owe it to everybody else. I mean, if I had it, it wouldn't have necessarily changed my experience with the virus. I just let it run its course. I didn't have it, But I wanted to make sure I didn't spread it to other people. And so that's how I recommend to other people. If you have a question, yeah, you should go get tested, because then you can be responsible in your behavior towards other people.
Now, there's all kinds of information coming out about this. And when it first came out, it was you have to have two of the five symptoms or mm-hmm. one of them. And now it's just if you want to, you can have it done.
Well, to a degree. I mean, they do want you to either have direct exposure with somebody that's been diagnosed. So if you're living with someone or working in close contact with someone who's had it, then that'll probably get you a green light to be tested. And then the other, they do go through symptoms. If you just are worried because you have the sniffles, that probably is not enough because the resources are still limited. But they will go through the symptoms. And my understanding is they're not being too strict. Like if you come in and you really feel like you have symptoms, they're going to want to test you. Let's put it this way. They're looking for reasons to test you instead of to not test you.
Ah, I got it.
Yeah.
And you had some of the...
I had fatigue. I had a stomach ache. I had a headache. I had a slight fever. Just like 101, that was enough to go ahead and get
check the boxes. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing all right. I'm glad your girlfriend's okay.
Yeah, she's fine too. So
we were planning on going to dinner, and you sent me a text and said, "Hey, the girlfriend's not feeling good. We're gonna have to reschedule."
That was gonna be our first foray back into the world of restaurants with Casey Scott.
But we'll do it again.
We'll have to do it so much because I still haven't gone out to dinner or anything.
All right, well, we'll get it done.
I'll tell you who loves me, though. It's the DoorDash guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're like besties now, right?
Christmas card list?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love it. Yeah. Hey, well, we're excited today. I promised it last week, but my calendar was off, and I'm not sure what day it is, but today is the day for useonlyasdirected.org to come in. We've got Susanna Burt here. You know, Matt, it's been a while since we've had somebody from Ogden on.
I know. It's been too long. For a while there, it was Ogden every week.
Yeah, because I needed a ride to the studio.
I know. Now that you've got your driver's license, you left Ogden's not even on your mind.
The state's our playground now, but we're excited to have Susanna Burt here. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I can have a similar experience as you. We had my daughter go get tested not too long ago, and that was fun to watch an 8-year-old have a long Q-tip shoved up the nose and tears.
I think for a kid, that would be really scary.
Yeah.
But you said you've been a fan of masks before masks were cool.
I have been. Because I got sick, really sick, about 4 years ago, and every time I travel, I get sick. So I had a number of masks before, and so in January when this started to kind of bubble up, I'm like, I'm so glad I have my masks now ready.
Not only do you have masks for every day, you've got masks for outfits.
I do.
I love that.
I do. They match.
We could talk masks all day, but we really want to talk about what useonlyasdirected.org is going. And we are, I mean, without your guys' help, we wouldn't be able to do this podcast every week. And, you know, with your help, we have reached over 400,000 downloads. We've been doing it for over a year. And the amount of people that have texted and emailed and sent responses to us saying, hey, this has been very beneficial to me, to my family, to my addiction. So thank you. Thank you on the behalf of our listeners.
Along those lines, my son, who's 17, we built a half pipe in our backyard for skating. Of course, that's not the point of this story. But a friend of his and the friend's girlfriend had come over last week to skate. And she came over and she said, oh, so you're Matt Woolley really from Project Recovery? This is a 17-year-old girl. And I said, yeah. And she goes, oh, yeah, my mom and I always listen to that show.
That's awesome.
So we talked about
that's
it.
That's awesome.
There's a random connection.
I love
it. This girl and her mom listening to our show. And I've had those sorts of interactions with people here and there. And so I appreciate, too, the fact that you give us the voice to connect with so many people.
Well, I love this.
So. And Susanna, I wish it wasn't the case, but it's been on so many of our podcasts where people got into their addiction through a legal subscription, and it turned into something that they weren't planning on. So much of the fact that, you know, we've had people go, if you'd have told me in 10 years I'd be homeless, down in a park, without shoes, shooting up heroin, I would tell you you're crazy, but here I am, and that's what I was doing. And it all started with a legal subscription. And I don't want to say that we're against that.
Correct. No, absolutely not. But we are looking at, just so everyone knows, we are looking at changing the name because we know so many people were actually given a prescription that they used within the guidelines for 30 days because the doctor prescribed it for 30 days when they really only needed it probably for 7, maybe 3. And then they became dependent. And so we're trying to find ways to look at alternatives before someone becomes dependent to the prescription opioids, because it is so, so powerful in our bodies. But some people really need it. People who have cancer, people who have had major surgery. But again, it's acute, not long term. You don't need it more than a week.
But so, how that's a great question. I agree with you. How are we going to do that? Because, you know, if I, the average person, you know, I go and get a surgery and I'm given pills for a month, I think there's an implication that I need them for that whole time.
Right. And that's actually why we've worked with a lot of the physicians and the Utah Medical Association. We've been doing that for a while now to change what insurance does, because they it's cheaper to just give you a month worth of pills rather than, here, we're going to give you three, then come back in a few days if you need them still. So like a year ago, I had three of my daughters all had their tonsils removed. All of them at the same time.
At the same time.
That was a,
you guys stocked up on ice cream.
Well, no, popsicles, but yeah. And they came and they said, hey, do you, you know, how many days of prescription medications do you think you'll need? I'm like, we will need Tylenol and we will need Advil. That's all we want. If we need to, we want to reserve the right to call you and say, hey, we need something more powerful. But we made that decision because we're really empowered, knowing through the research that it's okay to say, I don't necessarily need it.
And that's the first part of your three-part solution, is speak out, is to talk to your doctors and ask if this is necessary. Because I know, Dr. Matt, you had the same situation with your son when he got his tonsils out.
He had a sort of a different type of surgery, but we were given a bigger prescription than I wanted, and we went, I pulled the physician aside and we talked about it, and he said, oh yeah. And I mean, they weren't trying to push it, but I think there's a culture there of ending people's pain. That's right. What physicians do, or they try to. And so when I mentioned a concern, he was very responsive to me and said, oh yeah, why don't we do this? And he cut the prescription into like a quarter, and then we took those home, and I let Jake for the first 24 hours be on that, and I actually tossed the rest.
Right. Well, and the other thing, just so we're talking about recovery too. You want to make sure that if I'm in recovery, which I am, and you go to your doctor and you are having surgery or your kids are having surgery, it's okay to talk about that with your physician and even your pediatrician or whoever it is that's going to be doing the surgery, dentist, whatever, to let them know that, hey, I have an addiction in my past. So can we make sure that we talk about the options thoroughly so that I know that this is the right decision and I weigh the pros and cons for, should I take an opioid or should I take a medication that has a propensity for dependence or addiction?
I heard somebody use this term just earlier this week that I'd never heard of, and I thought I've heard of all the terms in recovery thus far, and some people call that a freelapse. Have you heard of that? It's a free lapse because it's
I haven't heard about
prescribed
it.
For the doctors.
Because it's permission to use it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And I think you're 100% correct, where it needs to be an open and honest communication with your medical provider and saying, I've got this history. Is this necessary? And that's what we need to do, is have these open conversations.
Yeah. And that's where I see our physicians, our dentists, our pharmacists as our partners, so that they know us. And I would encourage everyone to continue to go with, obviously, permissions as far as your insurance, to go to the same doctor as often as you can. Because I know that's why I changed my kids, dentist, because we were seeing different dentists every time we went in. I'm like, this isn't continuity of care. But that's where we want to make sure that you're seeing the same people. You're checking in with your sponsors, or you're checking in with your therapist. Check in with the same doctor who has your history. And if you do have to change the doctors, share that. And it's breaking that stigma. It's breaking that uncomfortable conversation that we sometimes have to have. Like, yeah, back in the day, I used to abuse this substance. And so I know what my personality is like. So, hey, can we have a conversation about it?
In your experience, though, how difficult is it to get people to follow through? Like in your case, a parent who is taking their kids in for tonsils or something routine. I could imagine that there's might
it's
be a lot
scary.
Of embarrassment and hesitation there for the parent to admit to their history.
Well, so one of the things for me, I can remember when I had my first child a long time ago, they ask you when you go in for delivery, have you used substances within the last 7 years? And I had to check, yes, I've used these substances in the last 7 years. So then my pediatrician and my own doctor call me, oh my gosh, Susanna, why are you using drugs? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I've been sober for years. And so they go, you had to check this box. And so there is that stigma of, if I say something, people are going to have this like vision of who you are. Mm-hmm. And what we want people in recovery to know is that you're a great parent. It's okay to share this. You're in recovery, and we know that we as parents or people in recovery, we sometimes make mistakes or we stumble or we have hiccups or whatever you want to call it. And that's part of our process. So we want to really empower those parents to feel like they can talk about it safely. You wouldn't want to glorify, like say, oh yeah, it was the best time when I was high or I was tripping. You don't want to share that kind of a story. But being very open and honest about what you've done and maybe good and bad consequences from it with your physician, with your kids, that's where you start. And then you can start saying the boundaries or here's what I can't have these medications in my home, even if though they're prescribed for my kids. It's too much of a risk.
Do you think we need to create a mindset for mm-hmm. people to be comfortable doing that? Because I think there's a certain mindset of the repercussions that might come from sharing that. What kind of mindset do you find is necessary for a person to get to that level of comfort? You're very comfortable with it, obviously.
Yeah, but I've also been in recovery for 24 years.
Exactly, and so, it's part of what you do. But yeah. How about a person who's like, how do we help them shift?
Well, I think it's not just them. It's us as a community. So I may be in recovery, but my husband isn't. So he has never used substances, you know, and he threw me under the bus, jokingly, to our kids. But I mean, having those people in the community not shame, not put down those who are in recovery or who are in their process of recovery, those who are struggling with addiction. We have those around us that need to support us in sharing those stories. It was actually Mary Jo from USARA. Mm-hmm. It's the one that really empowered me to share because being in prevention, I don't talk about that I'm in recovery because I'm on the other end. I want to make sure that we prevent our youth from living my story. And she said, people need to hear that that you do have success. So having advocates for you having people in your family that aren't shaming you, having even your physicians or your doctors support you in those decisions, I think is the first step. So when you talk about a mindset, it's everyone around you that needs to change the mindset first. And then you being able to feel like, I'm okay. I'm okay if someone doesn't like me or someone feels a differently about my past. Feeling that word I'm going to use over and over again is empowered to grow. To say, it's okay that I made mistakes. I learned from this process. I don't have regrets. I wish things had been different, but I not regret because I learned something new about myself and where to go from here. And that's kind of what I would do.
So kind of a self-acceptance. Yeah. I think that is empowering because it does decrease the likelihood that you're swayed by what you think other people think.
Yeah.
And then I think one other thing you said was kind of along the lines of social responsibility. If a person can realize I'm doing this for the benefit of others, whether it's modeling to my own children, by breaking the stigma to my physician, like if a person can, I think, reframe in their mind what it means to be in recovery, that you're actually a powerful advocate for change. So if you keep your mouth shut, that should be harder than opening your mouth and talking, because if you keep your mouth shut, you're not being that advocate for change.
Right. Well, and the thing is, like, so Casey, I know you're a dad, and Matt, I know you're a dad. I'm a mom, and we say we want to do things for our kids, and that's a great catalyst or a great thing to want. But I remember people asking people that I was around that were recovering from methamphetamines. And they're like, oh, those parents that did meth around their kids, they're horrible. I'm like, no. You don't understand the science of addiction. You don't understand that dependence, that need. And it's really, really hard for people who aren't struggling with addiction mm-hmm. to grasp mm-hmm. why you wouldn't be – you want to do good things for your kids and your family. So – I just want to make sure everyone understands it sometimes does have to be about you. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to say, I'm going to do better. And so, again, with Use Only As Directed, we want you to say, I'm going to speak out. I'm not going to take meds into my home if I don't need them. I'm going to get rid of those that I don't need in the house. And be able to be comfortable saying, I am in recovery.
So, what's the dialogue right now between
useonlyasdirected.org and physicians. I mean, I think a lot of times people think it's us against them and they're pushing. But, I mean, is it an open dialogue?
It's great. I mean, I shouldn't say it's great now. I can only speak from limited experience, obviously. But we are really making some huge changes. Last year or 3 years ago, we actually partnered with Intermountain Healthcare, and they helped create a message to the doctors about think of these five questions you ask your patients. And then on the front side, we had, hey, patients, these are questions you can ask your doctor. Do I really need this? How long should I be on it? What's the process for getting off of it? Do I have any family history of addiction? I mean, those are all things that...
How to manage pain without an opioid.
Because there's a mindset that, you know, many who have started their road to addiction began with, the doctor prescribed it. And so he's smarter than I am. He knows. He went to school. I didn't go to school. So I'm just doing what he's prescribed.
Right. And when you only have 15 minutes in your visit, you want to just get it and get done because the doctor's going to be quick. We're working with physicians. We're working with not just Intermountain, but the Utah Medical Association to see about what are good messages so that we're not vilifying doctors because they are partners, not the enemy. And looking at ways where you can stop it with the physicians, the pharmacists too. So those are the two groups we're looking to partner more with. Because they are the ones that are having those conversations. We did a message last year about kind of changing not just the doctor, the white coat syndrome, but changing that your doctor should be someone you feel comfortable talking to, that you do ask questions to them, not just, hey, tell me what my treatment plan is and then we'll move forward. It's, hey, by the way, I haven't been sleeping either. Is that going to play a role into this or, you know, anything? And I've seen, at least through Intermountain, the time a physician spends with a patient grow and asking more of those questions of kind of figuring out what is really going on, getting to the root of it. So there's a much better dialogue and we are engaging them. They're on our committees to make sure that we never want to vilify them. They're truly partners in this.
You're listening to Project Recovery, and we're talking with Susanna Burt as useonlyasdirected.org. I think we've tackled the first two parts of the three-part solution, that speak out and opt out. Coming up, we're going to talk about throw out.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on Project Recovery. We got Susanna Burt from useonlyasdirected.org with her three-part solution, speak out, opt out, and throw out. Now, I want to revisit just opt out a little bit because you said when your own kids were getting their tonsils removed, you guys opted out and went with Tylenol and Advil. And then a lot of cases, that seems to be enough for everybody.
Correct. Yeah, there's actually some research out there from Sweden showing it was a longer-term study that the Tylenol or acetaminophen and ibuprofen together were as effective or more so than an opioid or narcotic for pain relief after surgeries or after like for acute pains. So.
And I think I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of people don't realize how to use both of those medications to manage pain. We just are so used to taking the one opiate prescription and then that's it. But by alternating, and you want to review that during that opt-out phase, when you talk with your physician, say, well, teach me how to do this.
Yeah.
And I know some doctor's offices will actually give you a handout that tells you the schedule of how to take acetaminophen and ibuprofen to manage pain.
Yeah.
But I think throw out is one that's really going to be important to our listeners, because for many, that's where there's an abundance, yeah. and that's where it can really get scary.
It is. You know, again, I can tell you, being in recovery, having I had had back pain for so long, and I had a physician that would freely give me medications. And it was frightening having these opioids in my house, knowing that I was dependent on certain addictive behaviors. And I was like, no, can't have these in there. But where did you go? I'm like, then as I started this job, I learned about all the different things you can do. And early on, we were telling people, like, put them into a diaper and pour water over it and throw it in the garbage.
Coffee grounds,
you know, make it undesirable. And now we have so many more drop-off locations. And we have at all the Intermountain pharmacies, all on most of police departments, which I know is scary for some people to go to drop off there, but a lot of law enforcement facilities have it. And a number of independent pharmacies actually have take back boxes. The other one is you could do it at home. They've got things like Deterra. So sorry.
No, you're
Deterra.
Fine.
And you've got like Dispose RX that you can put it in, and it makes it into a mess of grossness.
But one thing we don't want to do is flush.
Yes, you don't want to flush. And that actually comes from the environmental science side, because we don't want to have the chemicals put into the water, which impacts wildlife and the ground. So, yeah, that's definitely what I do. And unfortunately, right now, we had, because of COVID-19, our take-back events were canceled in April, which was really, really hard. And what we're seeing from the reports is that we see a spike in opioid overdoses and a spike in opioid misuse and abuse, because people still have it in their homes, or they have people that have passed away that have left these large amounts that they can't get rid of. So we're working with the DEA for options to dispose of these, because we know that's a factor in misuse and abuse, is having the access in their homes.
Now, I want to ask a question, and because you're a sponsor, but how effective are those take backs?
Oh my gosh. Last October, I think we took back 18,000 pounds.
Whoa.
Pounds?
Pounds. What? And that was just one event. And it's gotten lower because
that seems incredible to me.
Well, that's just the one day.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing is that more people are using the standalone boxes. So, like at Intermountain's boxes, they're seeing like 34,000 pounds a year just in those boxes. Mm-hmm. And when you do these like single day events, you get everyone like dumping as much as they've been hoarding, because they don't want to take it to either pharmacies because they're lazy. I'm lazy. I don't want to do
it. I'm lazy. Dr. Matt's lazy.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
But those are those are huge events. And so like in Ogden area, we had probably 2,000 pounds collected in October. I had to think of like the months. In October. And that's one area.
So I think a lot of people would go to their medicine cabinet and or they've been prescribed a prescription and they don't take it all, and they go, I'm just going to keep this in case I need it again. I don't want to pay for it again.
Hey, we are in a place where we're told be prepared. Got to be prepared. Got to have your food storage. Got to have like first aid kit. Opioids should be in my first aid kit, right?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Oh, no. I mean, no.
Yeah. No, the answer is yes, we are told this. Like, this is what we have in our mind, but no, we don't need that. There are things that you should keep in your food storage. Apparently, toilet paper now.
if you can find it.
Yeah.
But the narcotics, we don't necessarily need. That's where the aspirin, the acetaminophen, the ibuprofen, all of those can be in our kits that are much more effective. So that's where, again, we don't need to save it. And again, that's where when we talk about the change in policies with insurance, giving us those 3 days pills versus 30-day pills, that's also better for us, so that we're not left with, you know, 27 more days mm-hmm. of pills when we only needed three.
So let's talk real quick about useonlyasdirected.org. What kind of resource is that for the community and those affected with addiction?
So we do link to facilities through the Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health. So that's the public funded system that isn't necessarily a private industry. It's if you needed to go find a treatment provider in your local community, we link to that. If you have questions about what signs to look for if someone's being dependent or addicted or struggling, maybe their breathing has changed, you know, those are the things that, you know, accidental overdose or intentional overdose. That's what we were looking for. We do have those listed on the website as well.
And you guys just launched a kind of a new campaign that's rolling out up in Ogden. And tell me a little bit about that.
So in Bonneville's Communities at Care is one of the coalitions up there that's in the South Ogden area. And so it's South Ogden, Uinta, Riverdale, and Washington Terrace. And in all of their parks, they're putting these like basketball hoops that aren't full, like are half, or a table, a picnic table where it's, instead of having it flat, it's pitched up so it looks like a chevron or an arrow down. So for those of you who can't hear, see my hand gestures, it looks like a V.
Yeah.
with still the seating around it. And the message goes along with it that this may not be your best option, that maybe that you're not getting the complete picture. You know, think of what you really do need, and there are alternatives. Things like icing, physical therapy, and I'm going to share, as we get older, unfortunately, it takes us longer to rebound, and that's not what we like as humans, and so we're trying to remind people, icing may be your life for the next, you know, 3-4 weeks. An opioid may be really great to alleviate the pain for like 5 hours, but the icing is going to reduce the inflammation and help you rebuild that muscle, and whatever pain's there is going to eventually go away. But looking at our alternatives, yoga, physical therapy,
meditation.
I was going to say meditation.
Jinx, 1, 2, 3, 4, you owe me a pop.
I don't have one, sorry. But that, those are the things that we really see making more of an impact than just a medication that we're taking.
I think this is great, and I'm so happy that useonlyisdirected.org has partnered up with us for this year of Project Recovery, because there are so many people whose road to addiction began with prescriptions, and what we need to do is educate ourselves, find the best methods that are for us. And I don't want to come at, like I'm against it, because, you know, when we've opened up our Facebook page to this, some people say, I could not live without mine.
Right.
Right, and I think that's a valid point. I think it all comes down to two major things. Are you educated on the medicine that you're taking? And that is your responsibility. It's great when your physician or someone else helps you with that, but it's your responsibility to become educated on it. And then the second one is communication with your physician, the person that's helping you through whatever your issue is, whether it's acute, short-term, or chronic. And what are my other options? You know, I think a lot of physicians are more in the habit now of teaching people how to use other pain management tools like acetaminophen and ibuprofen. And then as you were talking, I was thinking, have you guys or know of any programs where we're teaching physicians to also educate on meditation along there? Because there's been some great research through the University of Utah and other locations on using meditation to replace opiates and to actually manage chronic pain better over time than the opiates can do.
So I can only speak to limited here, but there is that great, there's actually a, what do they call it? Like an institute up at the University of Utah.
I think Garland, Dr. Garland.
Eric Garland. Yeah. That's got great research, and we're so excited. It's well-funded, looking at that great research for addiction specifically.
Right.
What we've used it in the communities has been for anxiety, depression, stress, because we know those also lead to dependency.
So
or
prevention measures.
Yeah, so we're looking at that end. So we have in Davis County and in Weber County, and I believe some areas in southern Utah, using like mindfulness-based stress reduction and Cool Minds, Learning to Breathe. Those are all programs that help with the parents and youth to kind of process before it gets to that crisis point.
Training those skills.
Yes.
And I know in Davis County, where my kids go to school, that's been included in the school programs.
Yeah, every day, 15 minutes. It's so awesome. Yeah.
I love it. Well, Susanna, thank you very much for stopping by today and sharing your story. You've brought some friends along. We're going to hear from them, and they're with you, Sarah. We can't wait for that. But once again, useonlyasdirected.org. They got their three-part solution. Speak out, opt out, and throw out.
Well done.
Jinx, you owe me a pop.
Oh. The contents of this program are for informational purposes only. The program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, licensed therapist, or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this program. KSL does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the program. Reliance on any information provided on the program is solely at your own risk.